Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from the first days they're on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am really happy about today's morning show because we're going to basically take you behind the scenes of a magazine that I suspect many of you have seen, especially those of you who live and shop in Racine. And you have probably seen as you've entered or exited your own local supermarket or other establishments and businesses in town, a magazine called Bell City. Bell City, Racine's hometown magazine. And I am really excited about today's morning show because today we're going to be talking about this magazine with its co-publisher and editor, namely Katie Madison. And I met Katie for the first time, I'm pretty sure it was the first time, earlier this summer at a little event after the last summertime concert of the Kenosha Pops Band. And you'd either played that concert or had played earlier in the summer, I forget.
Yeah, I'd played that concert as well as a couple others earlier in the summer.
Right, in the horn section.
That's right.
Yes. But anyway, Katie, as I'll let her explain in a second, has some connection to my wife, Kathy. And we got to talking and got to talking about Bell City Magazine, which I have seen and enjoyed. And as a matter of fact, I had made a point of seeing a recent issue, and so it was very much fresh on my mind. And before you know it, we hatched this idea for Katie to come on the morning show and talk about what goes into the creation and the sustaining of a magazine like Bell City. And they had their first issue published back in July of 2016, and they have just released Volume 4, Number 3.
That's
so
right.
So this is an idea that obviously has taken hold. And so I'm excited to have her here, Katie Madison. We welcome you to the morning show.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Greg.
And remind me about that connection with my wife, Kathy, that we talked about that night.
Well, my father, Glenn Humphrey, and her dad, Bob Gall, we're friends, and also, I believe Bob was a teacher in my dad's school building. He was a principal at Roosevelt Elementary School in Racine. And as Kathy told the story, he opted to be there because he liked my dad, which was a great, great thing to hear, particularly since he my dad passed away 10 years ago. So and any time I can hear a story, you know, about my dad and his legacy, I'm, of course, heartwarmed.
Yeah, no, that's terrific. No,
and the other connection is that Kathy's dad used to direct the YMCA Boys Choir.
Yes.
In Racine, and my brothers were members of that choir. And so, you know, there's lots of things Bob's was saying in the Racine Dairy Statesman.
Yep.
Which we got a chance to feature actually in the Bell City magazine, which was really fun. And he had also been in a group called the Merry Mugs that was an entertainment quartet that played around, and I had gotten a chance to see them. So yeah, there was we probably talked a couple hours that night of all these great connections.
So. Absolutely. So were you born in Racine?
I was.
So
yep.
This is the only hometown you know.
Well, I grew up in Racine, but I lived away for about 35 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so we actually came back to Racine to start publication of this magazine.
You and your husband, Carl.
My husband, Carl, yes.
What took you away from Racine? Or tell us at least the sketch of your life here, and then what took you away?
Well, I grew up in Racine. I started college at Parkside, actually, as a music major with the intention of being a music therapist, and then transferred to UW-Milwaukee because they had a music therapy program, which I got into initially, but then it ended up to be not the thing for me. So I changed into mass communications in public relations, and that's what I got my degree in. And after graduation, I got a job at the East Troy News in East Troy, Wisconsin, which was, you know, clearly not what I thought I would be doing right after graduation. I had aspirations of being the PR person for the arts, you know. But in the early 80s, the economy wasn't tolerant of that plan. And so I started working at this little newspaper in East Troy. And because the basis of a public relations degree is print journalism. So,
right.
I mean, it fit right in. And, you know, I knew I had to put in my time and get experienced. And I really didn't expect to be in East Troy more than a year. I viewed it as a place to get some experience and move on. But I ended up being there 30 years.
Wow.
So initially worked for a small weekly newspaper, which turned out to be, I was very well suited for it because it was just being able to just be involved in a small community, get to know all the owners of businesses, get to attend a lot of different kinds of events and meetings. And I've always been a person that loved to learn and loved to be involved in things. And so it really ended up suiting me very, very well. I worked for this couple, you know, this is a small mom and pop shop where they lived upstairs and the kids and the dog were running around and all of that. But I was, you know, very, very welcomed there. And they actually decided to sell the newspaper after about 6 years when I was there. And they made me the editor right away. So, I mean, I had for a 23-year-old, that was a great, you know, opportunity. But they decided to sell the paper about 6 years later, and they offered to sell it to me. But at the time, I wasn't in a position to take advantage of that. And so it was sold to the Burlington Standard Press, which ended up buying up a lot of the newspapers around the Walworth County area. And it became then Southern Lakes Newspapers eventually. But I decided not to go with the sale. Instead, I ended up starting my own business, doing public relations consulting. It was a little business called PR Plus.
Oh.
And that really came about because of the people I had worked with through the years at the little newspaper. And they were looking for help in the kind of things I helped them with when I was the editor. You know, just writing things for them or putting together brochures or just helping encourage whatever they were doing. So, and part of that was the Chamber of Commerce, which I had been involved in. The woman that owned the paper, she and her husband, she was the president of the chamber. And it was a small town, so whoever was president, the Chamber of Commerce phone rang at their business. And so I was basically kind of co-employed in the Chamber of Commerce from the beginning. And so it was a natural thing. And eventually I ended up starting a little publication for the Chamber of Commerce to help them get the word out. And that publication still exists all these years later. It was a direct mail to the school district, a lot of business news and chamber events and things like that. So that went along for a while. Along the way, I met my husband, who had wonderful complementary skills to me, in addition to being a good guy and a friend and all of that. But he was a graphic design person and photographer.
Whoa.
And I was about the PR and the writing and the advertising part. So we started working together initially on that chamber publication. And then that grew into, you know, well, we got married eventually. So, and then he got involved in the PR Plus business, and in addition to the chamber newspaper, we did a lot of other projects, a lot of newsletters and a lot of work for the local businesses and nonprofits and school district and all those things around East Troy. And so after a while, though, people were starting to miss the local feeling of a community newspaper, because after the small newspaper was sold, it wasn't as local because right. It was part of a bigger machine, basically.
Headquartered elsewhere.
Exactly. And, you know, people in their little towns, you know, they're the center of the world and they want their things are what's relevant and important to them. So people were always asking, you know, knowing what I'd done before, why don't you start a newspaper? And I said no for a long time. And finally we thought, you know, let's just try it, you know. So we initially started a magazine in East Troy, and it was called East Troy Magazine. And we it was kind of a similar idea to the Bell City Magazine, or I should say the Bell City Magazine has similarities to the East Troy Magazine. But the idea was that it would be free to people to pick up around town. And it would be supported by advertising. It would all be local. It would all be positive. You know, it's the same basic model. And so we did that for about a year. And then people really liked it. And we were inspired to take it a step further and start a weekly newspaper. So that's what we did. In what would become the last issue of our magazine, we advertised for charter subscribers to our newspaper. And to our delight, we had 500 subscribers prior to even publishing.
Wow.
Which was, for a little town,
yeah,
outstanding and very much a show of support to what we were doing. And it was the most fun I've ever had going to the post office because, you know, every day there would be filled with subscriptions. So we started it in 1998. And started from scratch, same kind of thing. We concentrated on local coverage of anything and everything that was or is important to local people. We covered all the municipal meetings, the school board, all the athletic events, all the business news.
But again, specifically everything. East Troy.
Only East Troy. Mm-hmm. And the other newspaper was still going on. Which was kind of funny, really, because by then, Milwaukee didn't even have two newspapers, but East Troy had two newspapers.
Yeah, right.
So that was this crazy.
Interesting. I'm just thinking, in 1998, that's just, at least for me, just two or three years into that period where people started to really have the internet coming into their homes. And so 1998, it was probably a little early for it to be clear that there was going to be this new thing that ultimately would be a very serious threat to standard print journalism. But not in 1998. I don't think too many people were talking about that or realizing what was on the horizon.
We weren't concerned with that, but we were in tune with the advancements in technology. And one of Carl's other great assets is that he's very techno-savvy. Hmm. And he always, to this day, has kept us cutting edge on all the technology, which it's a labor-intensive profession in business. And so the better job you can do with technology, the better chance you're going to have of being successful from the business side of things. And so we had digital photography very early on. When a lot of newspapers didn't because of their infrastructure. I mean, they were not equipped to do that transition. Over time, they did. But right away, people would notice that our pictures were especially crisp and clear. Our printers loved us because our files would come in very, very well put together, where other papers were still struggling with more of a manual process. So we always had a quality advantage to what we were doing. And plus, our content was always really strong for local and always very positive. I mean, we still needed to cover, you know, the things that weren't as pleasant in the police reports and things like that. But we always had in mind the good of the community. You know, we were never out to make anybody look bad. You know, if they looked bad on their own, then that was, you know, a different matter. But that was just our approach to things, you know.
So you weren't interested in the salacious scandals of East Troy.
No. And honestly, there really weren't many.
Not too many, I suppose.
So, you know, that was a great time. Our kids were young at that time. And so we always joked that if someone was really paying close attention to our coverage, it would have kind of grown through elementary school to middle school to high school, because we were basically 24 hours on duty, always had a camera with us. And so we were just always involved in things. And so there was probably a little slant to the age our kids were at the time. But truly, I mean, we were around everywhere and we liked it. I mean, it was fun to be involved.
And I assume that you did essentially all of the writing.
I did have help in that case. We did have staff, just because you just needed it to cover everywhere. So it was Carl and I
full
time, right? And it was weekly, so then the churn was faster.
Right.
So we had let me think now. We had one other full time staff person that, fortunately for us, had skills to do both ad sales and some meeting coverage, because a lot of the meetings would land on Monday nights, were when people love to have meetings. Mm-hmm. And so to be everywhere, we needed, you know, Carl covered meetings too, because we had to have everybody involved. We had a sports guy. We're retired. A guy we actually approached us in the grocery store. We had started the magazine without a sports guy, which I don't know what we were thinking, but he saw our magazine and he was working. He was retired and working part time as a checkout guy at the grocery store. Real soft spoken guy, and he's like, "Do you need some help with sports? I would love to do that for you." And he was fabulous. He had a really deep knowledge of sports. But he also had just this tender touch about really putting the kids in a good light and knowing that this was not their career, this was their, you know. So he was a wonderful asset. And then he would help us deliver newspapers. It was, you know, one of these small town things where people would help. We'd have Wednesday mornings would be when the paper would come back from the printer and was all hands on deck to stuff the inserts in.
Yeah.
And
wow.
We had another retired guy that would come in just because he wanted to help. And we had him in our masthead as TC. That was his initials. But we call him the informant because he was a retired school guidance counselor, and he always had like the scoop on everything. So, and then he'd come in because he liked to know things. So then he would pick up stuff, and he was just a wonderful guy. He just recently passed away. We loved him. And then we had, you know, some office help, really dedicated people that just, you know, everybody just wanted it to be a good thing. And it was a close group, and then we had some interns, we had some students that would help us with some stuff too. And so it was kind of a mixture of part-time and volunteers, and just so all told there was maybe six or seven people
making it happen.
Yep, we had another guy who did sports photography, who was a tax accountant by day and a sports photographer by night. So it was very much a community effort. And so we published that newspaper for 10 years. And we always joked that we would do it as long as our youngest was in school. And we almost made it. We sold the paper in 2008, and she graduated in 2009. But it was time. We had done it for 10 years. And
I should think it really swallowed you up in some ways. I mean, it had to be kind of an all-engulfing effort, and you can only do that so long,
right,
I should think.
Right, and so
let me just reintroduce you. We're speaking today with Katie Madison and finding out a little bit about her career in journalism centered in East Troy so far in terms of what we've talked about. But we're here specifically to talk about Bell City, which is a free magazine devoted to the city of Racine, which is where Katie was born and raised. So take us from this newspaper in East Troy to Bell City. How did that come about?
Okay, so we sold the paper. I went to work for the Chamber of Commerce for 5 years, and then we decided to move to Springfield, Illinois.
Oh.
Which sounds completely random. And in some ways it was, but at the time, our kids had all grown. My parents had recently passed away. Carl's family lives down in that area. And so we just, it was kind of an empty nester, restless, I don't know what it was. But, and there was also a part of I don't know. We just wanted a change of scenery, I guess, and whatever. But
Springfield's a fascinating city.
It really is. Uh-huh. A lot of great history. I was able to get involved in the arts community, which back to the beginning, I was always very interested in helping promote. So I ended up helping. I had some relatives that had in-laws that were connected to the Springfield arts community. So I ran a gallery, initially ran an event for them. They needed help to get their major fundraiser going. They had had some staffing changes and were in a panic, actually, and I happened to roll in at the right time, and so I jumped on that. So I got to know a lot of people very quickly, and after the event was over, they hired me to be their executive director, which was really nice, because I managed a gallery and a performing arts center. It was like my dream job, and it was really fun. I got involved in the downtown Springfield Main Street organization, which was really fun. Did that for a while, and then I worked for the Illinois Symphony for a while, doing business management and some development work there. But after 3 years there, we were homesick, bottom line, and we missed working together because we had worked together, Carl and I, all those years, and we had then 8 years of not working together. And we just wanted a way to do that again and come back to Wisconsin, and so it was Carl's idea to come to Racine, and I was like, I don't know why, just so flattered that he would want to come, you know, but he's like, I've been going there too for 25 years, so, you know.
So even though it's your hometown, he had some powerful sense of connection with it.
Because of coming to visit my family and being around, and we attended church here in Racine during the later years of being in East Troy, because we would come and go to church and hang out with my parents afterwards, stuff like that. So, and I was coming out here all the time because I played in the Bell City Brass Works.
Oh, yeah.
So I was coming here on Wednesdays for rehearsals, and, you know, and then when my parents were ill, I was coming over here all the time. And so we did feel a sense of sentimentality even leaving the area, even though I hadn't lived in Racine for a long time, you know. So anyway, so what to do in Racine? We wanted to work together. We wanted to work in publishing, but what? And so we dreamed up the idea of doing a magazine for Racine, knowing that Racine has never had its own magazine. And we knew, of course, the Shoreline Leader back in the day was that feel-good weekly place you looked every week to see who you knew. And we knew the publishers of that and people that work there, and we knew the feeling behind that. And so we wanted that sense, but we also had our background from our East Troy magazine and having worked with small businesses, knowing they really needed a place to advertise that people would see and know their values matched, you know, the feeling of wanting to patronize local businesses and giving them exposure. So there's like that kind of mission, but also that Racine was really in need, we felt, of some really positive messaging. You know, Racine has been through a lot since the early 80s, and we were sensing this renaissance kind of happening during our visits to town, and just feeling like through our publication, in addition to it being a business venture, was also a way to kind of give back to my hometown and really let it know how great it is. And by being away, there's a perspective that you gain. And I definitely felt that. And so we put our house in the market in Springfield. thinking we'd have a few months to figure out this thing. Well, it sold in 3 days.
Ooh.
And we needed to move within a month. And so we had to kind of go, okay, here we go. And so we actually landed here in March of 2016 with nothing but an idea of what we were going to do.
So when you decide to, for instance, create a magazine that does not exist, what are the first things that you have to do? I should think one of the first things you have to do is figure out what's going to be in it, which probably, because of your background, you already had a pretty good sense of it. But then you also have to have the stuff it takes to actually create the thing, to mm-hmm. print the thing. What comes first? What was that process of creation like?
Well, you have to decide, first of all, is this going to be a subscription publication, or is it going to be something people pick up on the newsstand? And we decided pretty quickly we wanted it to be not a subscription publication, just because there's actually a lot of liability that comes with a subscription, because people pay you up front and then you owe them. You know, so if you're starting up something new, you're confident, but you don't want to take on that liability.
That's fascinating. Never would have occurred to me, but that really puts a weight on you. And then if, you know, God forbid something happens to you or your husband or in whatever way that you can't deliver, then you, you are in a sense, a place of liability. That's interesting.
Right.
And, of course, the world had drastically changed since 1998, and I'm sure that informed your decision as well.
Well, yeah, and in the way of people are not as willing to pay for information. Because in the past, many things were paid, like subscriptions to magazines and newspapers. With the internet, information is free. And so we didn't feel like we wanted to do that. Plus, we were aware of Racine's pockets of different types of people in different areas of town. And we really wanted to cross over those lines. And we wanted it to be accessible.
Yeah.
Because with the knowledge that people assume they know about others, but they don't.
Right.
And so our idea with our content is that we would share information and give people kind of a peek inside and maybe help some understanding, because it's easy to make assumptions if you're looking in from the outside.
Absolutely.
So that was part of it. The other thing we needed to decide is, like, what kind of publication did we want it to be? What kind of paper did we want it to be? Like, our vision right away is we wanted it to be high-end, glossy kind of publication. But when we started pricing it out, the gloss paper was so expensive, it would have caused our advertising prices to have to be too high. Mm. And again, we were sensitive to that. We wanted to be affordable to small business, and so we wanted it to be, you know, accessible to them. Or otherwise, what's the point in doing this? So initially, we actually printed the magazine on a heavyweight newspaper stock, and it was still bound, you know. So it was the feel of a magazine. It was formatted as a magazine, but didn't have glossy paper. The glossy paper we have now came in, I want to say, about a year and a half ago, and that was actually ironically to the the tariffs that were placed on Canadian printing paper.
Oh.
Because what happened is our price for newsprint, our printing cost, because of the increase in newsprint prices, increased. I think we sustained like three different price increases. And this is a problem because we only adjust our rates basically once a year. So we had to absorb that, and that wasn't what we wanted to be doing. And so it just happened that we ran across actually a former vendor of ours from our East Troy days that had a publication that we were just passing through Walworth County, and we happened to pick it up. And they had gone from that heavier stock newsprint to this kind of lightweight gloss paper. And we were like, I wonder what they would charge us to do that. And so we looked into that. And because of the increase in newsprint price, and because this was an affordable alternative, the price difference wasn't that much. And so we were able to upgrade our paper. So it was kind of turning lemons into lemonade. So, I mean, we were still paying a higher price for printing, but we were getting a quality paper that really set us apart from the other publications that are in the grocery stores,
right,
which are mostly newsprint.
Right. And it's so interesting. I think we wouldn't necessarily stop to think about what a big difference that makes, just in terms of the way it pops.
Yep.
And that those more typical free publications that we all see that are on more of a newsprint kind of thing, there's just something kind of vague.
Yeah.
Versus when we look at your magazine, for instance, with this typically beautiful full-color photograph on the cover, and it just, it has this zing. Our eyes are drawn to it. And especially for a magazine like this, that's everything.
I mean, well, because the goal is to get people to pick it up.
Right.
And it's a very fast decision. And actually, the cover, obviously, we have an in-house photographer who is fabulous. And so that's to our advantage. But we were actually inspired to kind of do it that way a little bit by the, I don't know if you've ever seen the Our Wisconsin magazine.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Ryman publication. And it has that kind of look to it. And we didn't want to put a lot of words on the front, and they didn't do that. And it takes a little bit of guts to not, because the traditional wisdom is that you would put a cover full of big headlines to attract someone's attention.
Yeah, lots of words. Yeah.
But we decided to give this a chance to, it was the right thing, but. You asked what we did first when we started working on this, and one of the things we actually did, and I'm not even remembering how we found out about it, but Mr. Ryman, I can't remember his first name, who started Ryman Publications, actually wrote a book about his experience in publishing.
Oh.
And it was called I Should Write a Book. And so We bought the book. We had to seek it out because it was out of print. But we went to a used bookstore, and we actually bought two copies because they had two copies. Then we didn't have to take turns reading it. So
oh,
we
okay.
both read it at the same time, and that was inspirational. And we also, you know, obviously picked up every single publication in the area, so we knew what was here. And then we had a sense, as you referenced, from our past experience, kind of the types of things that we wanted in the magazine. We knew we always wanted to highlight a small business. So every month we do something called Shop the Shops, which mm-hmm. highlights a small business. And we've recently expanded that to be the alternate to that. Column is called Spotlight on Service.
Oh, yeah.
So in addition to the small retail shops, we can alternate by featuring the service businesses, which are also very important. One of the themes in promoting local business is that there's many goods and services are much more than commodities. You know, if you buy from someone who's knowledgeable, you have a much better experience in your purchasing. And also, I would argue in your life, you know, if you have relationships with business people, that's a way better situation than, you know, putting something into a computer and having it delivered to your door, because the human interaction component is what's, you know, important.
For sure.
And then the other thing we always wanted to do is in a similar way is promote local restaurants. And so we do a feature called Great Tastes. And then we wanted to also feature people. And so we started a column called A Racinian to Know, which is an interview kind of Q&A kind of thing, which if you pay attention to your October Bell City magazine, you might see someone you know, namely Mr. Gregory Berg, who I've invited to be our person for October. as an aside. And then in recent, like a year ago or so, we added another column called Aracinian to Remember. And that's someone from history. And we have a columnist that contributes that to us. Her name is Margot Drummond. And she's a retired teacher for Racine Unified School District and also someone very interested in history. She had taught history along with English at Park High School primarily. And she, we met her because she was involved in Preservation Racine for years and was also involved with the Mound Cemetery. And she used to take her students to Mound Cemetery as part of their history lesson to, you know, meet all these folks they were studying.
Right.
And so she took us on a tour of Mound Cemetery, and she had such an amazing way of kind of bringing these people to life. And we just chatted during that interview as she took us around to these different tombstones. And I said, well, it'd be so cool if you could, you know, if we could bring this to people in the magazine somehow. And she's like, well, I would write something for you. I'm like, you would? So ever since she does an amazing job. And then similarly, we have a columnist. His name is Jim Mercier. And he writes a column for us called Made in Racine. And that is stories about, just what it sounds like, different things that have been made in Racine through the years. And Racine has quite a rich history in entrepreneurship and innovation and all of that. And he, too, has just this wonderful writing style and passion for that history. He's a collector of memorabilia from all these different places. And he has an exhibit that he's loaned a lot of his pieces in the Racine Business Center. It's called The Spirit of Entrepreneurship, Racine Entrepreneurship. So he writes that for us every month. And we met him kind of by happenstance too, because when we first moved back to Racine, Real Racine had an event called Open House Racine County. And so it was a program where a lot of different places opened up. So on a Saturday, so you could go into places you wouldn't normally maybe get to go into. And so we were very strategic in trying to get to every single place we could during that time frame. And one of the last places we went was the Racine Business Center, which has been there for 100-something years, and I never heard of it. I never knew about it. And it was a fascinating place if you've never been there, by the way. It has still a lot of entrepreneurs in there, but it also it's developed into an artist community. So there's a lot of artist studios there. But we wandered into this Spirit of Entrepreneurship exhibit, and there was Jim Mercier, and got to talking to him. And so on the spot, I asked him outright about writing an article. And first he was hesitant. But he had done something like that, as it turned out, in his prior employer. And so he had a few in reserve, kind of. But he's took the leap of faith and started writing those and, you know, was able to use some of his stock, but has since expanded it greatly into and now I already have his articles, like, through I think we're through December. He gets so excited. He keeps writing them ahead. He's very dedicated, and he gets a lot of good feedback from readers. And then the other stories are feature stories about a lot of nonprofits in town, a lot of business stories. I've always had a theory in publications that I've put together about giving people a basic framework. And so the stories are all different, but there's kind of a format that makes you feel like you're visiting something that you're familiar with instead of just it being like crazy different every time.
Right.
Like kind of the what to expect. The other thing we do is we invite some of the important players in town in the community to let people know themselves what's going on. So we invite Real Racine to do an article every month. We invite Downtown Racine Corporation to do an article, and RAMAC, the Racine Area Manufacturers and Commerce. So they do, all three of those do an article mostly every month. And then we also recently have invited the Small Business Development Center to do a column, again, to help support small business and entrepreneurship. So, and then we have another column with one of our local fitness centers. So that's kind of fun. So
it's a great breadth of material. And I think one of the things I especially appreciate about it is you don't just sort of casually do it from where you happen to be and who you happen to know and what happens to be interesting to you. I feel like you and your husband have really gone out of your way to try to make this a whole lot broader than that. And my sense is that when these kind of publications get created, that's not always the way it is.
Right.
It's sometimes people just putting their own friends in or just whoever and whatever they just happen to encounter in the course of their own daily lives. Well, that's a very small slice of a community as big and varied as, mm-hmm. for instance, Racine. So it seems like you've gone out of your way to not fall into that pitfall.
Yeah, we really, really have. Although what's interesting is that we are very involved in the community. So we are out and about. So we do get a lot of suggestions. And we keep, again, my techno-savvy husband, we have a very efficient database system. So someone suggests something to us, it's not just, oh yeah, thanks for telling us. It goes into the database as later on. So each issue, we kind of try to strike a balance with different kinds of stories, and we'll take in all those suggestions. But what's really interesting is because it's just the two of us, we can be very flexible. So if we do encounter something, we can be responsive to it right away if it seems like it's the right thing at the right time. And I think that comes across as, I don't know, maybe more of a pulse on the community feeling rather than just ticking off a list of stories.
Right.
And sometimes as a result of that process, things happen where I'll be reading the magazine after we get it back. You know, you kind of have a little bit of like fresh eyes. And I'll be like, you know, that story really tied into that story. And this story seemed to give some background to this. So it fits together in ways that really sometimes aren't intentional.
Mm.
Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. But
sure.
It's kind of just letting that creative process go.
And how exciting to be able to see that.
Yeah.
How long has it been also online?
From the beginning.
Oh, from the beginning.
From the beginning, yeah. Carl built a website right away.
Okay. And it works out really nicely. Some things that begin as print and then eventually also become online, you have a sense that you're seeing a very different version of it or a reduced version or watered down. And, you know, it's very vibrant. Say a word about the wonderful nickname, not so much for Racinians listening, because I think most of them would understand, but we have lots of other people not from Racine listening. Explain that wonderful name, Bell City.
Well, Bell City is an old, old, old nickname for Racine that goes back to the French settlers. So Bell is French for beautiful. And so these early settlers encountered what they termed as a beautiful city. And we actually did some digging on that because I didn't know some of the true history. So there was a quote we found from the 1876 Racine Advocate City and County Residence and Business Directory. And I just love this. And we print this in every magazine. And I love the way it's phrased because it speaks to the time that it was written. On the west shore of Lake Michigan, 23 miles south of Milwaukee and 62 miles north of Chicago, lies the city of Racine. As it justly deserves, it has been christened and is universally known as the Bell City of the Lakes, not on account, as many may suppose, of the fair maidens residing there, and they are numerous, but from the fact that it is, without exception, the most beautiful city in the Northwest. So if that doesn't give you a sense of pride.
Yeah, no kidding.
But as far as it coming to be the name of our publication, there is a little story behind that. And that is when we first were down in Springfield and we dreamed this up, our first choice name was Racine Magazine. And so we started down that road. Carl found the domain names and all the stuff, and he started working on this the website and all of that. And he had seen that when you go to purchase a domain, sometimes people reserve them, and they're not active. They're just someone bought them, and they're reserved. And there was one reserved for RacineMagazine.com.
Oh.
And
not that there was a Racine Magazine, but somebody had just scooped up that domain just in case, maybe down the road.
Exactly. And that was our assumption. So we were like, all right, we'll be RacineMag.com. No big deal. It's easier to remember anyway. So it wasn't but a few weeks later, all of a sudden, that domain started to populate. And there actually was a Racine Magazine that came to be right as we're working on the start of ours. And we're like, darn it. But here's the interesting part. It wasn't Racine, Wisconsin. It was an African women's magazine in a French-speaking part of Africa. And it was kind of a high-end women's magazine, fashion, and has nothing to do with Racine, Wisconsin, but because the internet doesn't differentiate, we were concerned that there would be some confusion or whatever. But initially we were heartbroken because, like, oh my gosh, now what are we going to do?
Right.
We can't exactly call it the Kenosha magazine
if we're in Racine, right?
But then we remembered within a week or two about the nickname Bell City, and we thought, you know, that's really better.
Yeah. It's got a lot more pop. It just,
It's positive. It's more inclusive because now there's all these other communities that, you know, we can, represent better.
Right. And if it was Racine Magazine, it would feel stranger to be talking
about. Even
though
it's Racine County, but, you know, the people in Mount Pleasant and Caledonia and Sturtevant would feel better about Bell City as well.
Sure.
So anyway, but what ended up happening was that magazine did eventually go out of business, and we scooped up all those domains that were anywhere near. So we have a really good position on Google search where it will pop to the top every time. But yes, we did do the online presence from the beginning, and in addition to having the stories kind of listing as stories, we also post the magazine in its entirety. So the relationship between the ads and the editorial, that is still intact, which we believe is really important. Plus, it's in a format online where you push a button and it turns the page the way you would if you were reading it in front of you. And that's very intentional, too. And we do post the stories. Carl posts them on Facebook throughout the month, so to keep the publication fresh. And then that pops you to the website, which has it kind of laid out. But then you can easily go to the pages and flip. You can the website, because now we're an archive of a lot of information by now, all our content is searchable. And we also, all these regular columns each have their own tab. So if you just want to review restaurants or you're interested in, you know, a certain thing, you can find that. So it's a very good resource as well as being an archive for our publication.
It's beautifully laid out. It really is. And the content is very, very strong and refreshing. It's a job terrifically well done. So
you
and your husband should feel so proud indeed of Bell City Magazine, which can be picked up in print form all over the place and, of course, also seen online. And that is Bell City Magazine?
BellCityMag.com.
BellCityMag.com.
Yep.
So Katie Madison, co-publisher with her husband Carl and the editor, congratulations on a
job well
done, and thank you for being part of the morning show today. It was really fun to get the behind-the-scenes scoop on Bell City Magazine, and best wishes to you as you go ahead.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, a look back at the infamous feud between the Hatfields and the McCoys, a story which had the entire nation riveted in the mid-19th century. I'll be speaking to the director and producer of a fascinating documentary called The Feud that will be airing early next week on the PBS series American Experience. We remind you that the morning show is archived on our website.